Fast am I, good evening and welcome to this week's edition of Agenda. I'm Ewan Gorn. On the programme tonight, Garth commissioners have a new member following a by-election, though tactics used in the campaign have been called into question. The DEFA minister stands by his department's interested party policy change, and we look at the £100 million Ramsey Marina plans. The people of Lonnon have elected a new local authority member to serve them on the Board of Garth Commissioners. Andrew Moore topped the poll in a by-election held last week with 59 votes, just two ahead of nearest candidate Andrew Cronin. Mr Moore is a former chair of Laxey Commissioners and says he's relieved voters supported the candidate who ran the Clean campaign. He's criticised what he sees as the cyberbullying that's been directed towards Garth commissioners on social media in recent months. Well, I spoke to him just after the result was announced.
I'm very relieved, and I'd like to thank everybody for coming out today. I've been 10 hours in Bulldryne. People were out in the rain, minus 10 wind chill factor, and I'm glad that people exercised their right to vote, and they voted for the candidate who ran the Clean campaign.
When we spoke before the election, you had a specific sort of set of things you wanted to crack on with in your time in local government this next stretch. What is it you want to get to grips with, just to refresh our listeners' memories?
I would like an electoral system where if you run or decide to run for any type of political office in the Isle of Man, that you can do so without having the fear of becoming a victim of cyber bullying, effectively. That when you step into a position, you can be accountable to your electorate, but you should not be the recipient of abuse. It's only going to discourage nice people and good people from running, because if they get elected, they're always going to upset a minority, and the minority can vilify them and cause them great pain and stress to their families. I would like to see people who are using these methods or are responsible for slander or libelous statements or defamatory statements, that they should be held accountable and not be able to hide behind a keyboard, be held accountable as they would be if they were to say it verbally or they were to print it in a newspaper.
Did this campaign fall victim to some of those tactics?
There were certain aspects of this campaign which fell below a standard that I believe anybody involved with politics in the Isle of Man would like to have seen. I am very pleased that the straightforward, experienced candidate won out over anybody who would use tactics which do not fit in Manx democracy.
59 votes in the end. Overall, you've experienced in local politics. You're disappointed with the amount of people that turned out?
No, a by-election in the middle of the winter for a 14-month seat, I wouldn't expect anything else from that. There's not going to be a great deal of enthusiasm. A lot of people visiting today at Bulldryne thought they were voting for a full 5-member board. No, it's not surprising at all. It's a very bad time to have an election.
An issue that has been talked about a lot in Garth, not necessarily Lonnon, the seawall. I just wanted to get your opinion on that, because you'll be entering that fray, although things are moving on, but people will be curious to know what your view is on that plan.
I have had two or three local residents come into my shop and discuss, rant, you name it, about the wall. I know nothing of the plans. I haven't seen any of them. I haven't spoken to the consultants. I haven't seen why they've come to their conclusion. I haven't had a chance to question why they have a PhD or a degree in the subject, and I don't, and I'm supposed to know better. So I would like to speak to the people who know what they're talking about, look at the local reaction, and strike a balance, exactly as I did with the new replacement bridge in the village.
And just a final note, is it pretty much back to business for you in terms of working out what you're doing in local government?
Yes, I don't know some of the board since the amalgamation. I know of them. I've only heard and read minutes. I look forward to working with them and advancing whatever they've got going on. There's a popular misconception from people is that when you get elected to the board, you can suddenly achieve anything and you're going to do this and you're going to do that. Well, you can't, because you may make the decision and it'll be vetoed by government within a day of you writing it. So to get in, you look at what people are already working a lot going on with, see how you can progress it, look at the cost benefits of it, the cost effectiveness of it, and work out the logistics of it, and consult people you need to ask, because although you might be well-intentioned, you don't necessarily know the technical answer to a question, don't be afraid to ask, and I don't think the constituents mind you spending money finding out rather than making an error to save £500 on a consultant, you end up making an error that costs £10,000 in a year.
Newly elected Garth Commissioner for Lonan Ward, Andrew Moore. Environment, Food and Agriculture Minister Geoffrey Boot has defended a change in planning policy, which has meant some residents lost out on their rights to appeal. Changes to the criteria for interested party status have left some residents in Crosby, who'd been opposing a development in the village, feeling aggrieved. They've complained about the change, but Mr. Boot says it'll make the process smoother and residents will still be able to appeal via their local authorities. I asked him why his department felt the need to change the system.
For a long time, there's been a perception that interested party status, which gives someone the ability to appeal an application, was in fact not necessarily being used for the wrong reasons, but certain parties were using the system and causing applications to have to go to appeal, which delays economic development. And from a general public's point of view, you know, if you want to build an extension and a garage, having got planning permission and then finding you have to go through an appeal process was slowing things down. We reviewed this and we consulted on it. There wasn't an appetite to remove interested party status completely, but there was certainly an appetite to modify the way we work.
Just so our listeners are aware, what are you granted with interested party status?
Well, in essence, when an application is posted, anyone can make observations, objections to the application. But once the application has been determined, either by delegated powers or via the planning committee, then certain parties have the right to appeal. And interested party status gives you the right to appeal.
There's been contention with the change in policy introduced for interested party status, where a number of people felt they had lost that status unfairly. What I'd like to ask you was it fair to introduce a new policy on this during ongoing planning applications?
Yes, I think it was something that was legitimate to do. Following a statement in May 2018 to Tynwald members, where we outlined an action plan and part of a reform system, we were able to make some changes, policy changes, that didn't require legislation as such. And this was one of those what one might term quick fixes. So we decided to do this. There'd been some consultation. You have to draw a line in the sand somewhere when you change direction. Consultation had taken place. We knew that there was no appetite to remove interested party status. And we should remember that I think people, organisations in the Isle of Man are somewhat better off than their cousins across, in as much that they have no third party rights and interested party status. So once an application is determined, there is no right for aggrieved parties other than the applicant to appeal, whilst in the Isle of Man they can. There is no benefit in being an interested party until an application is determined, and that gives you the right to appeal. So we decided that we would bring it in. Any applications that were in process, people had the same rights to object or pass comment on the applications. But once an application is determined, then we introduce or grant interested party status. So I don't think anyone's been disadvantaged in process, but we had to start somewhere.
But what would you say to those who have had these concerns when they have invested time, money and I suppose effort into engaging with the planning process, with at least in their mind knowing they would have this status, then to discover it was lost, albeit I appreciate you've got to start somewhere? Well, what do you say to them? Is the answer simply tough, I'm sorry we had to introduce this?
Well, there's two parts of that. Yes, I'm sorry we had to introduce it somewhere along the line, and in July we decided that it was the time to introduce it. But secondly, there's always been a discretionary element to interested party status, but it's never really been defined, and this policy now refines that process. And of course, any objector or someone who wants to pass observations and become a third party or interested party, if they're denied that status because they don't meet the criteria, local authorities retain the right to be interested parties regardless. So they can always go to their local authority, and if there's a good case, I'm sure most local authorities will be sympathetic to a cause and may appeal on behalf of the local authority, but taking into account the observations made by individuals or an individual.
I mean, there's no guarantee, though, I suppose, that you would be able to convince the local authority. You don't have that surety that you would have otherwise.
I think it's important that we understand that interested party status, which gives you the right to appeal, is quite a privileged position. And to get that status, my feeling is that you should have some, the development should have some material and close effect on you. It shouldn't be a general principle of objection to development per se. And that's why we introduced a sort of 20 metre rule in terms of how material you will be, or how materially you will be affected by a certain development. And there was an element of objection and third party, interested party status from individuals or organisations that were completely detached from development. And as I said earlier, this was perceived, and I think in some cases it was definitively causing delays in the system. Private individuals or companies wanted to carry out development. When you get planning permission, it's useful to know that you can get cracking.
Planning is very sensitive, though, because to what some might say, oh, you're detached from that, why are you getting involved in this status? But when we are changing, especially in rural areas, in villages, smaller towns, when there is big development, it could conceivably be argued that everybody in that town, which will fundamentally maybe change as a result of a development, should be able to have that third party right. Do you appreciate that the lines, perhaps what DEFA's definition of what it should be and other people's, these are always going to differ?
I think you are correct. First of all, the planning process is quite complex. During the local plan review, Eastern Plan is in review at the moment, larger scale developments are flagged up and these are aired in public and people can put objections in. When it comes to development at a later stage and applications being put in, there is still a discretionary element as to who would have third-party status. And if there is a body of either individuals or the local authority, they will probably be granted interested party status if the development was such of a size that you're talking about that affected a whole community or had the ability to change nature of the community, yes. So it's still a discretionary process, but we put some guidelines in which will enable the planning committee and members of the public to see where the lines are drawn.
In terms of the policy itself, the 20 metres, some have suggested that might be a little bit too restrictive. Do you feel it's appropriate?
Well, we had quite a lot of discussion around this, and 10 metres was muted, and then we were looking at the way that properties interact and the distance between. 20 metres, 60 feet, it's quite a long way. Anything more than that, it becomes more subjective as to what effect it will have on you. People don't own views, for instance, and things like that. But it's a difficult one, but there is still a discretionary element in that, depending on the material effect on the surrounding property.
DEFA Minister Geoffrey Boot. You're listening to Agenda on Manx Radio. Plans for a major new 400-berth yacht marina costing £100 million in Ramsey have been announced. The site is the beach between the South Pier and the Queen's Pier, with dredge silt being used to reclaim land in front of the bowl and leisure centre. The project includes housing, commercial outlets and a 5-star boutique hotel, and is estimated, as we mentioned, to cost around £100 million. Well, Tim Glover has been talking to the man behind this ambitious scheme, Robin Bromley-Martin.
We're going to claim roughly 12 hectares, which is just under 30 acres of the beach, of which just under half of it will be developed. So that is the bit running from the bowling alley to the north end of the reclaimed area, which is the south finger of the harbour entrance. And there will be some commercial properties there, but largely it will be residential and in keeping with the Ramsey Urban Conservation Area next door.
I'm assuming that any project like this is going to need a big breakwater, isn't it?
Yes.
Bigger than anything that's... It's not there, is it? It's going to need building.
Yeah. No, we need to extend that existing finger breakwater out about 300 metres, and then it would turn south towards the outer end of the Queen's Pier for about another 350 metres.
That's going to cost, isn't it?
Yep.
That's a major civil engineering job.
Yeah. No, that is a key element in the cost. And clearly it's got to stay there for a very long time. We reckon that having done some quick calculations, bearing in mind that it's difficult to apportion costs between a dredged area and a non-dredged area. But we're talking probably the marine works in the region of £25 to £30 million.
Who's going to fund that?
Basically, there will be two funding sources. One is the profit from the residential development that we do between the bowling alley and the existing harbour entrance. And the balance of around £40 million would come from the private sector. And we have various plans afoot to look at the private sector, be it from infrastructure funds through to actually the yacht owners being able to buy forward their berths in the marina.
How much government involvement would be required for this?
None at all.
Simple as, yeah?
Simple as.
Just to give you planning permission.
Yeah, all we need is the... effectively, we're asking the government for a 2 years exclusivity in which to get planning permission and put the funding together and everything else. But we believe, yes, that this could be funded in the private sector quite easily.
What sort of time frame have you got on this? Say you got within that 2 year period the planning permission, how long would it take to construct this big breakwater and the pier itself?
Well, given the weather we have up here in this part of the world, and clearly we have a fairly short construction window. So we are hoping that we can start work in 2020, April, May 2020, and have the bulk of the breakwater in place by the autumn. And then that means we could then work protected through the winter in behind. So we would hope to get the first pontoons, the first boats into the marina for the summer season of 2021.
And who would it be appealing to, the marina at Ramsey? You've mentioned it's going to be 24 hours, 7 days a week. That opens it up, doesn't it, to a lot more business and potentially waiting outside, as you put it, in the rough weather.
Yeah. No, it's very interesting. There's some very interesting reports that the Highlands and Islands Development Board and the British Marine Federation sponsored a few years ago now. They effectively have broken down, segmented the market for visiting yachtsmen into three. There's the sale from yachties, there's the sale to yachties, and there's the sale past yachties. The sale from yachties are the people who moor their boats there permanently. And we believe that we can attract, given them, that people could have waterfront properties, quite a lot of people from across to come and keep their boats here permanently. Secondly, places like Dunleary with 1,000 boats moored there in marinas, or even Whitehaven, Cockoobury, or places like that, that's a nice day's sail to Ramsey to come for a long weekend. And clearly we want to make Ramsey attractive enough for them to want to do that, both in terms of bars and restaurants as well as other attractions. And then the third and last category is that there is a surprising volume of transit traffic of boats going to and from the west coast from further south. And if we can become a major stop-off point for that transit traffic, we believe that we'll have a significant number of overnight visitors doing that.
Alex Watton was in Ramsey to ask the public's view on this potentially mammoth investment.
I actually think it'd be a good idea.
Yeah.
Bring visitors to the place. There's plenty of room on here for everybody, people with dogs, people without dogs, people with the boats. I'm surprised I don't see many more boats here anyway.
I mean, we want to get people to Ramsey, but I think we'd have to look at the plans a bit more.
Well, I suppose the benefit to the town would be it would bring some extra resources in, I guess, but it seems a shame to destroy this beach. I'd have to see the plans, but it doesn't warm my heart so far.
While Alex was in the northern town, she also gathered the view of the Commissioner's Chairman, Andy Cowie.
The development plans at the moment are looking at it will run parallel with the end of the South Pier, mm-hmm. And the Iron Pier with a gap in the middle for access for the boats to come in and for the lifeboat obviously to get out, which is another key consideration.
Most of this part of the beach then?
Yes.
Big.
It's a fairly substantial development. Yes, they were talking about 200 properties and the marina itself, which has got to be quite substantial to have any impact really.
How would that change the existing properties here?
It would certainly affect the view for some of the properties, but if you look, it's not that many residential properties apart from the Kings and Queens apartments, which are again quite built up anyway, so I suspect it may even improve the aspect. A nice marina with boats is not an unpleasant thing to look at. Certainly Peel Harbour is quite an attractive proposition now the work's been done there, and it's improved the overall appearance of that section, I think.
Was the decision to have it this side of the pier because you wanted it to be so big?
Well, again, we haven't been involved in the decision. It is the developer is making a proposal to go ahead on this basis. I think there are some technical aspects to it that make this a little bit easier. It's a little more sheltered than the north side. There is an area of special scientific interest on the north promenade, the Moorook side, which obviously can't be disturbed, and that would have a big impact on any development plans. And it's nearer to the town centre, which has got to be a good thing for any potential visiting boaters or residents.
I suppose from your perspective, it really is the tourist numbers that would be of interest.
Oh, indeed, yes. It would, a successful marina will bring in a lot of visitors, certainly in the summer. There will be jobs created. It will provide certainly work for the businesses around the shipyard and that area. And there's talk of trying to develop a marine hub in Ramsey, which would be great, bring the shipyard back to its former glory, servicing a lot of those boats, which will need work.
Talking about a marina in Ramsey isn't a new topic. It's something that has been going on for decades. From your perspective and from your position, I suppose, how optimistic are you, or how realistic do you think that this is actually going to happen?
Well, who's to say? There's an awful lot of hurdles. There's a significant financing burden, the planning permission, not the least. There's a consultation exercise which needs to be undertaken. And there are quite a few technical concerns with the actual development itself and making sure it works, silting up and the like. The only good benefit is the marina doesn't affect the operation of the harbour, so our shipping services will be unaffected, the fishermen and the Sulby River as well, which won't suffer any detrimental effect, which was a problem with the original marina proposal.
So we're talking about two contentious things here, really. It's marina and also pretty much up to the Queen's Pier, which again is another issue that's been coming back and back. Could it have a knock-on effect, hamming up some support to get that sorted? Say if there's a brand new marina here in Ramsey next to an old iron pier, could there be an effect to get that moving?
Yes, I mean, certainly developers have spoken to us, and they are very aware of the work on the iron pier, and I think they see that as quite an integral part of the development. Having such an imposing structure alongside the development can only be a good thing for both parties. I think there is some talk of trying to have some sort of mutual cooperation to get the pier completion finished.
Chairman of Ramsey Commissioners Andy Cowie. Well, Ramsey MHK Dr. Alex Allenson was equally enthusiastic about the possibility of major investment in the town.
I'm very excited about any plan that's going to bring investment and also jobs to Ramsey into the north of the island. We've been talking about marina development in Ramsey for decades, and we've got a credible scheme now that's coming forward to actually provide for really quite a big development in Ramsey, which bring in a lot of new people, but also jobs for the people who live there and work for the businesses that are there. So very, very keen to see it progress and see some of the groundwork taking place.
As you say, this has been a subject that sort of dominated ideas around the town, that as well as the pier regeneration, I suppose, for decades. What makes this plan different? What makes it more credible?
I think the people involved make it credible. They've had experience of this sort of development in the past. I think the vast majority of the people of Ramsey would like to see investment in the town. And the vast majority of people are keen on a marina development as well, to bring new businesses, new work into the town. The difference with this scheme is that it looks to put the marina not in the harbour itself, which is a working harbour, but actually out to the sea, so it can be used 24/7 so that people aren't dependent on the swing bridge and on the tides to actually get in and out. And also it gets around some of the concerns about the silting of a previous developments of marinas as well. So I think it certainly has got a lot of potential to really rejuvenate the north of the island.
As it is separated from that working harbour, are you expecting different kinds of visitors than more leisure-based yachters and things like that?
Absolutely. I think any development in Ramsey has to cater for lots of different people. We've got a very much a working harbour with Meseron there, with the fishermen there, but also local people who have boats. This will be in addition to that. It won't distract from it. It won't take away anything from the existing harbour, but it will add in extra business, particularly for our shipyards, which have had quite a bit of investment put in, but needs that work. So really, Ramsey in the north of the island could become one of the centres for expertise in terms of maintaining and also repairing boats.
What it is doing, of course, is taking up a section of the beach, the sea there, which of course is all natural at the moment. So there's bound to be a bit of reaction to that. What's being done to incorporate it into that sort of natural area without being too intrusive?
Well, I think that's a very good point. What we need to do at this stage is actually publicise the plans, get local people involved in those. What it will do would change the seafront of Ramsey. Now, that seafront's always been changing from the Victorian time when we had the pier to the stone pier to actually the seawall itself. I'm hoping that this development can add into that without taking too much away. It would be a loss of some beach, but that it would be gaining actually some seafront. It would be gaining the regeneration of the prom there, and also hopefully would kickstart some of the further developments we want to see, such as the rejuvenation of the Queen's Pier.
In terms of funding the project, it's said that 50% of it's going to be taken from the profits of the residential parts that are going to be built there, and 50% from private sector. So what actual involvement will government have?
That's a very good question. At this stage, I think that government have always been a bit wary of getting involved with big marina developments. We've seen that in the past. We were very, very close before the financial crisis in terms of getting marina development in Ramsey. This is private investment coming in to the island to provide really good infrastructure. I think what they need from government is the ability to present this to the local population, to get some of the backing that certainly myself and Laurie Hooper are very keen on doing. They've also talked to lots of the other northern MHKs to get that interest behind it. And I think what we can do as politicians is actually help explain the plans, but also scrutinise them so that it actually provides for the people of the island what they need, which is jobs and prosperity.
Ramsey MHK, Dr. Alex Allenson. Well, that's all from tonight's programme, and you can listen again to this episode online via Manx Radio's on-demand service. But for now, have a good evening.